Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
You know, Paul, in just 20 years, church attendance has declined by 23%. 70% attendance of church was common in the year 2000, and it's down to 47% in 2020, the 23% discount. So why is this happening? And, you know, I have a couple of ideas, and so do 100,000 other people. And although we are indeed, there are many sociological and religious reasons for the decline, I believe that a big reason is a grand misunderstanding of the nature of the Godhead, is the nature of what God is all about. There's an all too common view of God that is judgmental, that is a judgmental, punitive white male that will get you if you don't toe the line. You ever heard that, Lindsay?
I might have heard that once or twice.
That's our guest coming up. I'll introduce her in just a second. As a result of my studies of the Bible and a plethora of theologians, I have a quite different feeling. Last week, we presented the idea that God is not an unattached stoic, but instead demonstrates on multiple occasions the depth of feelings like suffering and mourning and sadness, as well as exuberance, joy, and satisfaction. God is not just off to a side watching, you know, making his list and checking it twice. He is looking for happiness of his people and for the well-being of his people. And today, I am really pleased to be talking with one of our most popular guests, life coach Lindsay Davis, about the nature of our human connection with divinity based on what the Bible calls image of God. I could go on and on, but with that statement, I want to bring on Lindsay Davis to discuss the next, to discuss the nature of God as it pertains to sin, desire, and godliness. And we need help in this. We'll see what happens. This is going to be interesting. Lindsay, welcome to the next chapter with Charlie.
Thanks, Charlie. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. I'm also humbled to be here. This will be a great exploration.
Yeah, I like that. Thank you. A great exploration. I'm not always sure I can put the adjective on it, but it is going to be an exploration. You know, great, we will see at the end. Now, today, Lindsay, we're going to get quite theological. And I know you don't consider yourself a theologian or a teacher, but you have several years steeped in deep conservative Christianity. And so you have a lot of Bible familiarity, you have a lot of understanding of the nature of God through Christianity, and I think it's important, as I reminded our listeners last week, that for both you and I, when it comes to religious language, our mother tongue is Christianity. That doesn't mean that we reject anything other than our mother tongue. It's just that is the language we speak, and we the one in which we are raised, so we know most familiarly. But, you know, even though we respect Buddhists and even atheists for their well-thought and well-reasoned approach, that we speak our mother tongue. Do you find limits in that, Lindsay?
I do, but I also find it really liberating to set the foundation that way. And I think it gives a permission to really explore, to use different terminology, and to trust that someone listening can adapt it and for their own context and, you know, take the gold and leave the rest. I think it just gives a relaxedness to the conversation on a really deep topic.
Yeah, thank you. That's a good approach. I like the relaxed approach. and that we are presenting ideas. We're not pretending to be, you know, the writer of theological commentaries, but, you know, we've both read a lot of the Bible and have brains, and so we've interpreted it our way. I have listed 5 subjects I want to cover in this podcast, and I know that's a lot, but I think it will be helpful, and I've called it the challenge, the implication, the conclusion, ramifications, and the solution. Let's look at the challenge. You know, I think we need to begin, Lindsay, with the nature of God, and there is Richard Rohr is popular on it, as well as a writer that I just read in The Suffering of God, Terence Fredheim, talked about this judgmental, punitive, white male nature of God that really doesn't represent, it represents a lot of American religions and European religions. You know, it represents Catholicism in Europe, as I just, you know, spent quite a bit of time in Europe, and I see that representation. But that's not the way the Bible presents God. I mean, you certainly get that punitive nature from some of the Old Testament, some of the prophets, but there's also always messages of hope, and I think the essential message of Scripture is that God is love. It is His nature, His essence, and that means, now here's the interesting part. No one's going to, you know, very few people are, they may deny the truth of that, but they're not going to deny that that is what is stated of Christianity, that God is love. But do you know what that means, Lindsay? That means that God is not only in the business of giving love, but that He longs for love from the ones He created in love and for love in creation. Julian of Norwich writes, God wishes to be known, and it pleases Him that we should rest in Him for everything. What do you think about a needy God?
I think that unravels a lot of traditional Western theology. It reveals in and itself the very mystery of who God is and his nature. And yet, I think in the questioning of it, when we think of, like, what is the nature of God? Is it love? And then if there is love, then that's reciprocal on both ends. And is He needy? You know, I think first we need to be brave enough to question that and be grounded enough to grapple and not have immediate answers. So I don't pretend to have, you know, the answer to is God needy, but it does seem, you know, to your point that we're created in the image of God, that wanting in us, is that a reflection of a similar wanting in God, a seeking? Sort of that old quote, like, that which you seek is also seeking you.
I had never heard that. Where is that? That's an old quote?
Going to put me on the spot because I'm having source amnesia.
Source amnesia.
I'll search it up.
No, you don't have to. That's a great quote. What we need is also needing us. You know, I mentioned it last week, but I think it's worthy of mentioning again. And, you know, we become Episcopalian, and we have a liturgy. It's sort of a service that we use to dispense the Eucharist, to dispense communion, the body and blood of Christ. And the very first line in the communion prayer is, Heavenly God, gracious Father, in your infinite wisdom, you made us for yourself. And then it goes on to say right away, there's a semicolon there, and then it goes right on to say, and when we had fallen into sin and become subject to evil and death, you in your mercy sent Jesus Christ. and, you know, he died on the cross. But I think if we just take that first clause, in your infinite wisdom, you made us for yourself. That I told my priest whenever we had a conversation, I said, we should really stop the Eucharist prayer right there and just talk about that. That in your end, what does it mean that God created us for himself? What does that mean to you?
It's such a good question. I'm just thinking about it right now. You know, it posits like this idea that maybe God, even though we've been taught he's whole, and I do believe that's true, that there's also a non-wholeness if he created us for his pleasure or for companionship. And, you know, I remember talking to you previously about this, Charlie, and then, you know, if we're created for God, then that also explains a little bit about why he made us with free will, why humans can be so amazing and loving and also so horrible at the same time, because we have that individual freedom of choice in any moment who we want to be and how we want to behave. And it really speaks to almost a vulnerability, a willingness to be vulnerable on the part of God, that he would create something, someone with free will that could very well reject him or reject his love, and yet did it anyways.
I love that. I think that's so, free will has so much to do with this. And if we understand, I can't believe I'm going to try to define the Trinity in Bonaventure's terms, is that the Father is the fount of love, that all love comes to him, continually comes to him. It is just like an unlimited source of river. But he has to disseminate that love. Love, Bonaventure say, before God has anything, he is good. Good is the noun. Love, to me, is the verb from good. That good is no good until it's distributed. If you don't distribute good, it's really not good. What is it? It's just, I don't know. It's not good. He must distribute that goodness, that love, and that came to the Son. He and the Son shared it, enjoyed it, just immensely, you know, were involved in it. But they had a third love that was between the two of them that needed to be disseminated, and that was the beginnings of the Holy Spirit. That's the Bonaventurian view of Trinity, and that this love that must be given, and in the given there is this joy of receiving it, that the Father enjoys receiving it from the Son, the Spirit enjoys receiving it from the Father and the Son, and the Father and the Son and the Spirit enjoy receiving it from each other. There is this certain take that as I've read the Christian mystics, all of them, virtually all of them, talk about that God's desire for our love is equal to the love that he desires to give to us. That is what is meant by the Episcopalians when they write, and that was taken, by the way, from Aristotle, that God created us for his good pleasure. So that means that insinuates that indeed God is needy. How does that challenge, you know, because I know I can anticipate some listeners saying, well, what does that have to do with the otherness and the holy self-contained or self-fulfilled God, that God need something. Does that make sense? Was there even a question in there?
I'm not sure, but I'll attempt to stab. And really, even to tag back to what you were sharing around Bonaventure, which I'm not going to even attempt add to your explanation of the Trinity, but something in what you said just now around a demonstration of that loving nature. And what I heard in that was the most beautiful model of intent versus actual impact. And that for love, it's not really enough just to have the intent to be loving or to act from love, but that really needs to be lived out in impact. And that seems to be a real theme, like through the New Testament and like older Christianity versus established corporate religion. And that when we get back to the heart of it, you know, we can even then look at that distinction in almost like a lens to look at history, and that regardless of what organized church leaders had in mind and their intent, was their impact such that was loving, or was it something else completely? And then to answer your question on neediness, I think one of the words, you know, look at synonyms of neediness, because maybe we have some baggage around that word, but it really comes to the heart of desire and knowing the nature of desire. And can one desire from also a place of wholeness? And I think that changes the conversation. What do you think?
I love that. Desire from a place of wholeness. Not a place of incompleteness, but a place of wholeness. And that goes to my second point, the implication in that we are very clear in the first chapter of the book and in Genesis that we are created in the image of God, in the likeness of God, very just like God. That means we too have within us this need for love to give and receive. That is, I will contend, that is our primary driver in life. Our primary driver in life, and I've put them in my three words, to be heard, to be accepted, and to belong. To be accepted, to be cared for, to be cared about by other people. That you are important to other people and that you belong to something important. And those are fundamental to me characteristics of love, although love is much more expansive than that. But that we too are created for that. That is what we are longing for. And that, in the Garden of Eden, that was the separation, is that because we have free will, and because we have an ego that is separate from God but can be united to God, that we tend to go with our ego and we tend to go with the power, prestige, and possessions to fill that need for love, we are putting square pegs in round holes. And that is become the separation between us and God, is that we don't look to God for the fulfillment of our deepest psychological, emotional, and spiritual needs, that we think they're found other places.
And we do all sorts of weird things to get them.
Yeah. Yeah, like what? I like that. I'm just curious what you're thinking.
Yeah, I think when we are disconnected from that wholeness and disconnected from that universal source, like the love and the oneness with all there is, we feel our separateness. And I think, you know, I don't know if I've ever said it this way except in this moment, but maybe that sin reveals the seeking, that we can feel there's something off. And then all of the distorted behaviors that come from that, as we're trying to, one is trying to feel better or get some sort of sense of power, of, I think these are your words, of prestige or belonging, deeper connection, whether we, and however we choose to fill that. And I think, you know, some ways, some behaviors are more destructive than others. Absolutely.
Yeah, you're tracking right along where I'm tracking, and that I, or where I'm going. And that is, I think, that was what I wanted to title this podcast, although I don't know if I'll title it because it's pretty out there. Sin and desire as gateways to God. And you say, how in the world is that true? Well, my desires, just for life in general, and the sin, the various things I do to placate my, which I would say are my original God intent, are only demonstrating what is already real within me. Simone Veil, are you familiar with Simone Veil?
I'm not.
Simone Veil, 1930s, not revolutionary, but, you know, advocate of human rights and a lot of, she was Jewish and a lot of deep study. She became Christian. And she writes this of the affliction that takes over human beings, and that our difficulties that we can't find what we want. Simone writes, the extreme affliction which overtakes human beings does not create human misery. Now, we think our afflictions create human misery, that, you know, it's the things that happen to us that create our misery. She says quite the opposite. It merely reveals our human mystery. So that affliction is revealing that we are susceptible to misery. And that the misery that we are susceptible to, we keep trying to find, and we keep trying to find the solutions in all the wrong places, where the solution is found in the love of God. And I guess, what does that mean? What is pursuit? Let's say everybody's agreeing. Okay, I'm agreeing, which I'm sure everybody's questioning, but I'm agreeing that the hungers and desires I have are natural desires that are godly desires, but I'm filling them with not so godly needs in my small self. What do we need to pursue God? How do we know we're pursuing God? I mean, is that going to church, Bible study, and praying?
And I think this is that individual, you know, to work out the answer for oneself. And it's like found in the seeking, in the desire. But I think the first piece is really to own that we want. And I think that want and desire, especially in spiritual communities, is I think it's really been given a disservice to be taught not to want, to be taught not to seek or inquire, and to really be fine with the status quo and fine with the easy answers. And I know this from performance psychology, which is more of my area of expertise. But, you know, we talk about VUCA environments, the volatile, the uncertain, the complex, the ambiguous. And when
sounds
humans
like my
encounter,
life.
Yeah, right? It sounds like everybody in 2020, 2021. But you know, when humans encounter things that they can't control in that way, it's volatile, it's uncertain, it's complex, it's ambiguous, they tend to tighten up by default, and they tighten up into judgment and into fear and into control, and tend to try to create a lot of rules and a lot of arbitrary expectations. And I really think that we can see that pattern play out historically in established religion. And once we can kind of see, oh, this is, you know, the topic of God, the topic of eternity, the topic of being connected with love, the topic of what do we do with this horrible, insecure, you know, vindictive parts of us as humans, to realize that that is totally VUCA. That's totally complex and ambiguous. And but what if we can just soften into that, that we don't have to control or have all of the answers, but we can really open ourselves up to be curious and to desire more connection, more truth, to desire a sense of freedom to explore and to test things out and to experiment. And really in the experiment, I think we find our answers, where we can test something and know whether it's truth by what it yields in its outcome or result.
I love that. Testing, experimenting, and there was a third one you said. But that is what we need to do. We need to test these. Now, in order to find, I think it's helpful, you know, I'm going to end with a very practical solution that doesn't require you doing Bible study or praying or going to church, but it requires you, but it suggests how you can live a life of meaning and fulfillment. But in the pursuit of God, there is a place, and this is where I've become so attached to those medieval Christian mystics, and I'm reading Julian of Norwich right now again for the third time, I think. There is required, Lindsay, a dedicated time to try to pay attention to God through contemplation and silence of just that thinking, and maybe having, whether it's the Bible or some other inspirational reading, some reading that at least gets you thinking off. We've got to be able to get thinking off the, you know, our production-oriented, success-driving, you know, being popular. All of that has to sort of take a back seat for, and it doesn't take a lot. You know, I'm going to throw out this outrageous number, like a half an hour a day. You know, if you were to spend a half an hour a day, it would change your whole view of the need for love of God. If you were to, you know, if you had a spiritual guide that could direct you to the right scriptures, because you probably wouldn't want to read, you know, Isaiah 30. That would probably not get you there. But don't you think it takes some sort of dedication to say, okay, I want to pursue God. It's not just this decision, oh yeah, let's pursue God. There is an active demonstration as a part of that. Do you think?
Agreed. I think with every decision in any arena, there's the decision and then there is the implementation into action, like to actually do something with that. And if one is wanting a deeper connection or more understanding of God, not just intellectual, but I think what you're really speaking to is deeper than intellect, a real deep knowing. I think it does have to start with discipline. They don't call it spiritual disciplines for nothing, but to carve out that time and learn to be quiet enough to hear and to learn how to sit with oneself and to sit with questions and to read and to contemplate And your half an hour a day sounds like it would go by in a flash, maybe for people like you and I. But it's something I've really grown to appreciate in owning that I am a contemplative and that there is a rich history of contemplative Christians and contemplatives of really all faiths.
Yeah, contemplatives of all faith, all seeking God.
All seeking God, and that a piece of that is to really look at the busyness and the noise of organized religion or just society, culture at large, and to understand that we must like draw away from that and have these regular periods to come away and to simply be and to be quiet and to be still. And I think that's where those deeper insights come, like the richer connection to love comes from.
You know, I feel like we need to offer our audience some kind of resource, and I really don't know a resource because I've read so many of these different people and so many ideas have come from so many places that I just have a plethora of ideas without any. All right, here's what I would consider, you know, like your book, The Path to Possibility, The Path to God. But it's got to be done in such a different language than the language you've done it before, because the language we've done it before, there is so much, you know, there's so much pissed offness in it. You know, if you don't do this, you're going to get this. And I don't think that that's the nature of God. You know, God's punitive behavior, just as an aside, and I do again believe I mentioned it last week, God's punitive behavior is out of abandonment and rejection. Is that he was abandoned and rejected. He created a people. He married a people that was called Israel. He loved them because they were called, he named them Israel from Jacob to be God fighters. He loved them wrestling with him. You know, he didn't expect any simple process, but that life's process would be difficult, especially after the fall of the world.
If we drop that fear of doing it wrong, that punitive fear that if we don't do quote-unquote devotions the right way, meaning the established way, whatever that means from our background, that we're not doing it right, and if we're not doing it right, we're going to be punished or we're going to miss out. If we can just drop that for, you know, if a listener can just drop that within themselves and give themselves permission to explore, you know, whether it is, and, you know, I'm going to squirm later that I self-promoted, but that was really part of the heart behind the Path to Possibility journal, was give somebody a quiet space and guided process to be and to think and to contemplate and feel and even just to breathe. But this is going to get me in big trouble with the mainline religion.
That's okay. They don't listen to my podcast.
They don't listen to anyways. But, you know, even we know to do this as humans in nature. You know, I don't think that the nature of God, of love, is so separate from the energy that we actually feel in nature. And I think that's why it is so magnetic for people. They crave being in nature. They love that beauty of nature. It's quiet. And it's got this stillness, but this power to it. It's got a truth to it, an expansiveness. And so, you know, even a simple place to start is to get up early during this Christmas season when it's dark outside. Get up early and listen to and watch the sun come in the morning and just be. you know, go outside, even in the crisp cold of the night, and just look up at the stars. And I think really invite that desire, that inquiry for who is God and what is the energy of that universal power of love. And how can I live that out in my humble, imperfect, beautiful way in my life today? How can I show up and be 1% more conscientious to live from love and act from love to my loved ones and in my professional work and in my words? And I think that's a beautiful place to start. Where, what do you think, Charlie?
I love it. And when, you know what I want to do? I want to start with that right after a break, and I want to get right on that. Hi there, you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie Hedges. And we are talking with Lindsay Davis, and we're talking about, we're doing a series, Has God Become Irrelevant? And this week, we're talking about sin and desire as surprising gateways to God. And the concept is, we are all of our desires, our core, deepest desires, in my theology, and I don't want to speak for Lindsay, but in my theology, are pure desires. The way we go about satisfying those desires may not be pure, but the desires for love and for acceptance, for belonging, for who knows, all of those, you know, key relationships, important loving relationships, all of those are great desires. All of those are representations of God. And yet we go out and we try to think, you know, me now and I will say my new Tesla, which I'm probably not going to get, but my new Tesla,
it's
like, that's, what's that?
It's under the tree.
You know, like that's going to satisfy me, and it's not. And what you were suggesting, as we were talking about, how do you implement or use a searching after God? And you did agree that some kind of contemplation, some kind of spiritual insight, spiritual reading, some type of being in nature. And I really agree with you in nature, because nature is simply God's creation. It's God's handiwork. And so you can't be in nature and not somehow, even inadvertently, appreciate God, because that is the creation of God. It does require some kind of disciplined, one must desire a disciplined approach to God. If we don't desire that, if the false ego or small ego only wants us after possession, cars, and all of the other things, then we're not going to attain it. Where do we find within ourselves? Where, you know, there are so many people that just say, I don't need it. I don't want it. You know, I've got what I need, and you know, there's no spiritual need. How do we send some kind of encouraging advice to people like that?
You know, if somebody is truly not wanting and doesn't desire, they probably turned off this podcast before, you know, a few minutes ago, to be honest. But
that's encouraging.
I do think, right? But, you know, I do. It's kind of that question, like, how do you teach desire? How do you awaken heart within someone? And I I grapple with this actually, believe it or not, quite a bit professionally, like where I can see a greater potential for somebody, but really it doesn't matter because if they don't have the desire, the heart within themselves to pursue it and to commit to it, I'm not sure another human can really do it for somebody else. I think it's really something one chooses for themselves. But I do think there's something around understanding that I think for most of us as kids, as infants, we were born seekers and we were born curious and we were born these like bundles of desire and want. And so I think it's interesting to inquire with oneself, like, when did that start to go away? What started to crowd it out or to clutter it? And, you know, I think that sometimes hurt can be a real reason why one would maybe choose the busyness of life and to really, you know, there might be an anger, a disillusionment. And so I'm really looking forward to your conversation even next week around that topic. But, you know, if we look at desire being like a healthy function, like an appetite, like what's going on that is distorting that healthy expression?
That's a great question. And so it really comes down to how satisfied are you with the emotional and spiritual state of your interior right now? And if you say you're perfectly satisfied with that, then you probably don't need anything we're talking about. But if you're not satisfied, as with most of us, even those of us who pursue spirituality kind of intensely, there's always a hole there. There's always something more, always something missing, because of the how grandiose God is and how much God has to offer. So I'm going to offer a final, what I'm calling, solution. This has nothing to do with contemplation. It has nothing to do with study. It has everything to do with action. And if you do this action, you will find yourself in need of serving something greater than yourself. And I got this from Viktor Frankl in Man's Search for Meaning, and from Martin Seligman, Positive Psychology. It's written Flourish. Are you familiar with Martin Seligman and Flourish?
I am. Yeah, him and Viktor Frankl, amazing.
Yeah, yeah, and they both. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that Seligman was sort of an offshoot of Frankl, that he took a lot of Frankl's ideas and put them into practical how-dos. But he says something that I think is really good. You know, each one of us is built to contribute to the betterment of society. Aristotle said the purpose of a human being is to contribute to the value of society. And I think all of us have that need in there. And I think there's a deeper need that Jesus pointed out, that's to contribute to the kingdom of God. And the kingdom of God is love, acceptance, and care. You know, it's not about power and overcoming, you know, powerful adversaries like the Romans in their days. So I've got two things that I took from Seligman, because I've really kind of gotten into this positive psychology a bit here lately. And he says the first thing we need to know are what are our, and he has an instrument you can take and you can get your five core character strengths. And he suggests you take a look at those five core character strengths. You first must agree that yes, those, when I do those, I am energized and fulfilled. And I would give my five, but they sound a little too lofty, so I won't do that. but I do know if I engage in those five character strengths, I am a happier camper. I am fulfilled. I am I feel treasured. But what he says to do with it, you don't just use it. You use it in service of something greater than yourself. And isn't that what you do with your coaching, Lindsay? Isn't that you take, you study? I know you're a fabulous student, and you're all the time working in mastermind groups and different groups of trying to perfect your craft. But do you not find that when you use those gifts in service of something greater than yourself, you're better off?
I agree. And I love that practical step for your listeners. I'm familiar with his assessment. And, you know, it goes to that point again around like intent versus impact. If any one of us are just studying or learning just for the innate pleasure, that's great, but it has a real limit to actual impact. But when we can take those strengths or take those activities and put it in service to others or a vision greater than ourselves, a contribution, that's where we are the most fulfilled. And I really think we're built that way as humans. And I learned this actually really humbly from my grandmother, and she's amazing. I aspire to be like her in many ways. But when she was going through some of her darkest times in a very challenging, challenging circumstances in life, she was so at peace and so in joy. And I remember hearing from her once that when she was having her hardest days, she would think about a way to uplift or encourage another person. And that application also then uplifted her. And I think that's such a beautiful picture of service to look at, you know, to see eyes for people around us and to have ears for people around us and see how we can contribute using our gifts, our abilities, our strengths.
And when we look at that those are characteristics provided by God, we are aligning ourselves with the Spirit of God. When we are using the gifts and talents that we received at creation, we're just aligning ourselves with the will of God, that we're using the way we are created. Let me give, I don't know that I'll read all 24, but there are character strengths, just to give our audience an idea of what character strengths look like. And I'll just go through a half dozen or so. Spirituality, bravery, honesty, kindness, gratitude, hope, creativity, leadership, zest, love of learning, curiosity, forgiveness, teamwork, humility, fairness. All of those, each of those are different strengths for different people. And when we use those, we accomplish what we're trying to accomplish. And it puts us back in line with God. Or does it?
Beautiful.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to wrap up. What I want to wrap up with is that I encourage the listener to don't feel bad if you have unbecoming desires or actions in your life. They are only reflections of something deeper and more profound. There is something deeper to the way they are aligned with the way you are created. And when you fill those, there's that, let me find that quote. I just listed this thing up, that quote from Blaise Pascal that says, "There is a God-shaped vacuum in the heart of every person which cannot be satisfied by any created thing, but only by God the Creator, made known through Jesus Christ." Blaise Pascal, I think he was in the 1500s. That we have this hole that can be filled only by godly things. And I just encourage our listeners to, you know, I'm not trying to make Christians or mystics out of people. I'm trying to make fulfilled people, people that have meaning in their life, and their meaning are when they're most aligned with creation intent. I think that's my point.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you there. And that there's something to, when we're brave enough to seek, and when we are courageous enough to grapple with deeper things within ourselves, it's within the grappling where we become grounded or strong or connected to ourselves, to truth, to love, and really also to each other.
No, I love that. I love the grappling, the grounding, of course, but I love the grappling, and I've already referred to it, but I think of Jacob fighting the angel, and he was grappling with God about what to do next. How are we going to do this? And I find that to be so strong. Lindsay Davis, thank you for joining me on this strange Christmas podcast, of which we're talking things that are just, you know, if we were talking normal Bible things, we could just be punching out answers really quickly, because we've had decades of training in how to answer these questions, and now we're asking questions that no one else is, or very few are asking, and so they're difficult to deal with, although I think it's very important for our listeners to understand, and I want to thank you so much for participating with me.
Well, thank you for having me. It was an honor. This was a fun exploration adventure. It wouldn't have been as fun to have a normal conversation. Everyone's having those. So thank you for having me, Charlie.
Wait a minute, buddy. When have we ever had a normal conversation?
Touche.
I don't think it's happened. Everybody, I want you to welcome and thank my friend Lindsay Davis, who is such a fine guest on the show. And I want to thank you for tuning in to the next chapter with Charlie. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.